Welcome back, everyone, to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I'm joined by Andrew Canyon. Andrew, do you want to do the intro for me, like do all the salesman BS? Do you know what you got to run through?
Look, you got to buy some stuff from Booktopia in general using the coupon code. You need to buy a copy of Marvelous.
Two for two.
You need to subscribe to the Patreon service.
Three for three.
And rate, review, subscribe.
Four of four from the field. Perfect. Fantastic.
Brass cotton numbers.
Welcome back, everyone. So today we're going to fly through it. Hopefully get it done within about half an hour, 45 minutes. What are we talking about? We're talking about Bryce Cotton and the Boomers in this latest inquiry that's come out. Melbourne United, Cairns Taipans, Adelaide 36ers, Lamar Patterson, the Bullets. We're going to recanvass that. Bit of decal talk, just a wee bit. And then I've got some tough questions for Andrew Canyon. Ready to jump in, Andrew?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot, but we were just saying that not much actually happened in this round. So, you know, it's one of these rounds where, you know, we'll pump it up as best we can.
Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about Bryce Cotton.
All right. Bryce Cotton. Probably had one of the better rounds, certainly this season, maybe in the last little bit. I mean, I thought he was unbelievable this year, this round. Yeah. And it's an interesting question because I want to talk about it in the terms of, here's a question I want to pose to you. Is he the best performer in domestic Australian sport?
Or Australian sport in general, beyond just
basketball. You've got like Aussie rules, like Dustin Martin's probably the best AFL player, I guess.
Yep.
I think he's the most sure ticket, but what do you think?
I think it's fair. I'm getting it hammered by people who know other sports better than me. Why not? Why not say yes? He is performing at a peak level virtually every game. He's carrying that team. Imagine the Perth Wildcats without Bryce Cotton.
Without him, they're a six-win team to this point.
I saw a great tweet from Adam Westerhout, actually.
Yep.
Westerhout.
Is this the Hey Hey It's Saturday thing?
Oh, don't get me
started.
That's
for another day. Bad, but yep, sorry.
Yep. No, this one was about talking. He said that he used to find the flex offense boring, but now watching it, it almost feels like he's watching the triangle offense and Michael Jordan. Watching the flex offense with Bryce Cotton at its pinnacle is just like a thing of beauty now. And I think it was an excellent, excellent statement. And I agree. I think it's like chocolate and peanut butter. The flex offense, Bryce Cotton, they just work together.
Right.
Perfect situation for the man. And he's got the talent to pull it off. And it's amazing to watch. I love it.
I want to talk about, because I put him in the sort of Mount Rushmore of Australian sport at the minute. You've got Cotton is representing basketball in the country. Obviously, otherwise, if it's globally, it's Simmons, obviously. But he's the guy who's there. And then, you know, Dustin Martin, and who's the best A-League player? Maybe Milos Ninkovic, I'm not too sure. And a bunch of others. But he's right there. And I don't think he quite gets the that pedestal. And, you know, I think if he played at Melbourne United and was Australian, he'd be there. I think the bigger barrier to him being on the front page or the back page most weeks is the fact that he plays for the Perth Wildcats. I think that the NBL can't quite, and NBL fans can't quite embrace him because he plays for the most, what perceived the most evil team, or the team that wins all the time. The tall poppy syndrome is stopping the growth, because you look at any sport and it's growing through star players, right? You look at the NBA and people aren't a Lakers fan, they're a LeBron fan. And whether they live in Cincinnati or Tallahassee, they support the Lakers because LeBron plays there. And I think Cotton's the same way. Like, Cotton could be the guy who every basketball fan in the country goes, I watch his games.
And they
don't seem to want to put him as their crown jewel. Even at the start of the year when people are like, oh, we don't think they're going to make the four, I thought that was absurd, because how can you not bet on the MVP? And his gravity is so great, you just know he's in the top four and in contention just with him. And it kind of bothers me in that way. Like, you should, the NBL should be funneling their entire league through this guy, because he's a sure ticket. You pay your money and you know you're going to get him in the high 20s. He's going to make amazing plays, one or two. You never leave disappointed.
Yep. And you're not going to worry about scandal with him either. You know, he's not going to, there's not something, I don't think there's many skeletons in his closet. He seems like a clean cut gentleman who does the right thing, says all the right things, good with the media. Very polite. Like, could you have a better spokesman for the league?
I don't think so.
I think you're struggling to find one.
And he's soon to be Australian. Like, it's just all the cards are aligning. And I really hope that papers, media, and the NBL itself realize we're going to funnel everything through this guy. Every single thing's going to be. And if he was at United, I really feel like, or Southeast Melbourne, I think that would have already happened. You know, in the same way that Andrew Gaze was everybody's favorite player, Cotton should be that. But I want to shift now, because when we talk about Cotton, like the big boomers conversation, I want to ask you a question, Andrew Kane. Could Bryce Cotton be better than Paddy Mills? They're the same height, same weight, very similar player, different ages. Cotton's 28, Mills 32, soon 33.
Jeez, it's...
I know, it's blasphemy.
I've seen all that Paddy Mills has put into the Boomers program. It's really tough for me to say that Cotton's ready to step into that number one position. I couldn't do it. I think 1-2 punch, you have them. You have them backing each other up. But I can't put Cotton ahead of Mills at this point in time. Mills is doing it at the NBA level. Like,
let me make the argument. Well, first, I just want to say the idea that you'd pick Matisse Thybulle over Cotton for any tournament, I think, is ludicrous.
Thybulle, bonkers.
Yes, he's a wing player, a bit of defense in that, but come on, in a tournament play, you want Cotton. You want a mature pro, not Matisse Thybulle, who's never played in one. That, to me, is no conversation. Same for you.
I want somebody who can get me buckets. That's what Australia always has struggled with, is just having enough guys to put the ball in the hole.
And finishes.
Defense, the system works that out, right? We're bred into defense. That's fine. But we need a couple of elite scorers. And Cotton is that.
Is that winning ingredient. He's won pretty much everywhere he's been. Turkey, the one blip, which is an issue if you're going into the Olympic, you know, you've got to win against those European teams. So maybe there's a bit of a question mark there. But Providence, they weren't meant to do as well as they did. He took them all the way, I want to say Sweet 16, maybe Elite 8 for the first time in a long time. And then obviously what he's doing with the Wildcats. And the Wildcats in his time haven't been like a amazing team like what, say, Ricky Grace had with the likes of Fisher and Crawford. I mean, that team was totally stacked.
Yeah.
These teams now, his teams have never been really stacked. I mean, even the years they had sort of Nick Kane, Tirico White, like they were good, but they weren't just like hands down given the trophy. He had to carry a lot of that team.
Yep.
The other thing I'd say was, you know, don't forget Paddy Mills played in the NBL the 2011-12 season at the age of 24.
He flopped like nothing else. He was the biggest flopper in the league.
There you go. And he wasn't, and flopped in the sense of he wasn't the caliber of Bryce Cotton at that time. And the NBL was pretty weak at that point too.
Sorry, when I say flop, I mean he literally would hit
the ground. And his numbers were good, but they weren't Cotton numbers.
No.
And, you know, that system and a few other things, but, you know, I'm just going on what's on paper. So I also think with Paddy Mills, you know, I take my hat off to the San Antonio Spurs and Popovich, but I think they took that star polish off him. You know, Cotton has been the guy at Providence. He's been the guy at the Wildcats. He knows what it's like to take and make big shots. Mills, that's not what he's been asked to do for the last decade. He's come off the bench. So then when it comes tournament play, and he was pretty big in the last one, but, you know, missed a couple of free throws and things, not pointing any fingers.
Yep.
But, you know, Cotton is that winning ingredient, I think. So, you know, the Boomers have a really tough time deciding that. And people are probably going to go, oh, Cotton, you know, Mills plays in the NBA. I think I'm silly. I'm just saying, think about it. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. It would be a great training session to watch, wouldn't it? Them two going up against each other.
Why they don't film that stuff? I mean, that would be an amazing three-part series. Picking the squad. Boomers. Yep. Those two gone. Jealousies. NBA. Oh, man. They're not going to do it. But anyway, this conversation about the Boomers, we have to talk about this Human Rights Commission finding. You've just read it. Give me your first impression.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit behind the eight ball on this one, having just sort of surfaced to read this news, which is a few days old now, actually 19th of March. So I am well and truly behind the eight ball. It's concerning. It's really concerning that basically the BA has been accused of being a white boys club. This arose from when the Opals had a situation where they raised issues. BA then instigated a report into their own organisation. So the Australian Human Rights Commission were engaged, and the reports come back and said there's work to be done. It's disappointing. And, you know, culture and, I don't know, it seems that there's a lot of this going around. You know, we've got this basketball, we've got political issues with culture and accepting people who aren't exactly the same as others. You know, it's concerning.
Well, I mean, the thing I didn't like was where they said people who wanted to take a step up in the admin. I mainly look at the admin because players will spring out from where they spring out from, right? But admin is something you have total control over. You know, yep. Your media people, your writer, your whatever they are. But people said they didn't want to, Indigenous Australians and otherwise didn't want to take the step forward because they didn't feel included or welcome or that it was even possible to get through. That was the part of the report I found really the most disheartening. A lot of it was disheartening. That was the bit I found most disheartening. Mm. I suppose the positives are like the BA approached them, like this was something they wanted to have done. You know, introspection is always good.
Yeah.
So that's a small positive. But one negative I think is no boomer or people who I kind of know in that space or that, you know, fans would know in that space have come out against the report and said, actually, this is a bit heavy-handed. We don't think this. So this wasn't part of our team. They've all kind of just let it, well, slide. Or maybe they're trying to bury it, or maybe some are in agreement with it. I don't know. But I can assure you, if similar things were said about this podcast, yeah, I wouldn't just be looking to let it slide. I'd be making some sort of retort if I felt it was, you know, heavy-handed, as I said. So that was not a good look.
Not a good look at all. One of the things I've always noticed about basketball at the engagement levels I've had with it is it has always been quite clicky.
Totally.
There's always a strong element of who you know, not what you know. Yeah, there's a lot of politicking involved in basketball.
More so than the other codes, I really feel.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that needs to, if some of that can wash out of it as a result of this, and whether the two are linked together, they would probably dispute my claim entirely. But
it's been my experience.
It's just always been my impression. And I think that even feeds through to the NBL level. I think a lot of the time it's who you know, not what you know, and who you're mates with and who you don't offend and who you say nice things about, can be a bit frustrating.
And I mean, I look at it as a simple thing. Like when you have a clause in the import rules that specifically deny people from outside Australia coming in, it just sends the wrong message. And I know why they do it. I understand it. But at the same time, if that's your philosophy, that's a trickle down because you're already putting up borders and barriers, and it's a trickle down. So I've always been in favor of getting rid of those import rules and just letting your salary cap kind of play out. I mean, if people are going to break the salary cap, they're going to break the salary cap.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. But anyway, that's it. Anything else to say on this?
No, that's all I've got.
Yep. Let's go to Melbourne United. What have I got here? They're 1-4 in their last five. They just beat Illawarra in a pretty down and dirty game, what, 75-65, a defensive
yeah, it was mess. A disgusting game.
What do you think of that game and their last four before it?
Well, look, that Melbourne Hawks game was horrible. I watched the whole thing and I don't know brutal. Why. I kept waiting for it to get better and it just didn't. Illawarra were terrible. They just couldn't hit water from a boat. But then Melbourne weren't exactly capitalising. To win by 10, to only win by 10 against the Hawks team playing the way they were.
Putting up 65 points. That's like a Tuesday night social scoreline, you know, 75, yeah. maybe more like 45, 55, but still it shouldn't be anywhere near that low. It was bad.
The Hawks shot 31%.
Oh, God.
But they had 86 attempts to Melbourne's 64 attempts.
Wow. Do you have an explanation for it?
Rebounding. Is part of it. It's really
that's a 20 extra shots.
I know the rebounding disparity wasn't that many. It was only six. I haven't got the offensive breakdown. The offensive breakdown in front of me, but
yeah. Let me tell you this though.
Melbourne's in a funk.
Oh, and look at this. I mean, they're 1-4 in their last five. They could be 1-5 in their last six. They beat New Zealand by 3 points when New Zealand were really in the muck and mire. They haven't scored over 75 points in the last three games. That's really, they're not a 75 point a game team. That's really, really low, even with the injuries.
Yeah.
You've got Landau, who everyone says is, you know, NBA caliber and a boomer. You got McCarron, who's in the boomer squad, and we think a good player, and he is. And then Chris Golding, who's a boomer. That is better talent than anything on, I dare say, Adelaide or Cairns at the minute, Southeast Melbourne, you couldn't get a three that good out of Perth. Oh, actually, Cotton and Mooney would probably take you over the limp. But the third best player, Blanchfield, on Perth is not a bit of a weak link.
Yep.
And then, you know, so that's good enough. And Illawarra, they're better than the three best players from Illawarra on a good day. And you got Harvey and then who? Simon and
Bestow. Maybe an 18-year-old or whoever.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So you got three. Yeah. They should be better than this. And we talked about this before. We were talking about Ewing theory and Golding's injury. Well, he's come back and they're 1-4.
Yep.
Winning only that last one. They won a 4-game skid the moment he got back. We were talking before. We were of the opinion it would be unfair to say that his return has resulted in losses. We don't feel that way.
No. Right? It's a good gag, but I think you are being really unfair if you pin it on him, because he's done pretty well. But maybe that is the premise of the Ewing theory. Who knows? But they've been hit with injuries as well. So
The injuries, good point. I want to ask you this. Which injuries hurt them worse, Hobson's or Jack White's?
I think actually Jack White.
Yeah, okay. I agree. Why do you think that?
I think he's been a real X factor and has provided a bit of youthful exuberance in this team of staid, dour, working professional players. He's come in.
I like that. Staid and dour working professionals. Nice.
You know, he's come in. He's ripping boards down. He's blocking shots. He's hitting threes, which nobody expected. And just is that spark plug.
Totally.
I've been really impressed with him. He's been fun to watch. And I just feel like with him gone, they just lack that oomph.
I mean, who would have thought that basketball was an athletic sport where speed and getting above the rim mattered? Like, the NBL seems to not reward. Like, look at Cotton gets that high off the ground and is just that quick and he's effective. Mooney, a little bit different. But, you know, like, athleticism helps in basketball. If you can cover the court quickly, it works. And without him, Melbourne are a little bit, other than McCarron and he, you know, Melbourne are a little quicksandy.
Talk about polar opposites, because you're switching out Jack White for David Barlow.
Exactly, and this was my point. This is why I say Jack White to that answer as well, because you lose Hobson, who's ultimately their go-to guy if they're going to contend. I think we both agree on that. But as far as like winning games in the regular season and momentum, Jack White's more important, I think. And that's the big thing, is because when you lose Jack White, it means David Barlow's got to step up and play 25, 30 minutes. And have you seen his sort of output at the minute? He's a nice player, but he can't do those types of minutes anymore. Can't do that.
He's a spot up 3-point shooter, and that's about all you can.
And he fouls. He's a little bit clunky on defense and things. They're asking. He's a good enough player for what they thought he was going to be. He's had to step into a role that's, I think, just a little bit beyond him at this point in time.
Yep. Well described.
Would you say that there's a bit of a cold war going on between United and the Wildcats with their sort of, what will soon be the Wildcats' third import spot when Cotton naturalizes, and United's second import spot? I feel this cold war going where it's like they've both got their finger on the red button, and Melbourne are waiting for Perth. Perth are waiting on the government. It's this weird thing. What do you think?
A lot of gamesmanship. I don't know if you heard Trevor Gleeson recently saying in a press conference,
no.
Oh, look, we may not actually get another import because, you know, really the naturalization is about the Boomers, not the Wildcats, and the amount of time and effort it would take to get a player over here, yada, yada.
BS.
Trevor.
Yeah, because here's the thing with the Wildcats. They don't want to get out. They are chasing a third championship. They've never done it. It's really rare of what New Zealand and Sydney are the only teams to do it.
Yeah.
If they don't win it, the three this year, then they've got to wait another whole – they've got the chances that they get this opportunity again. So rare.
Yeah.
They're going to go for it. There's going to be a third import. And I think Melbourne are waiting, going, oh – and not a good strategy by United, by the way. Be a lion, not a sheep. You know, if you're looking at the thing going, oh, we're going to wait until see what happens with Cotton and then we'll pull the trigger and, oh, you know, you're waiting for your enemy.
Yeah.
Not going to work.
I think the problem Melbourne have, if they're looking at another import as well, is where exactly do you slot them in? Like, there is no, apart from David Barlow perhaps, there's no obvious weakness. Like, they're all good players. So
best available.
Really a stacked person.
You just look at who's the best available. I think someone like DJ Newble helps you no matter where you slot him. You know, he's a defensive guy. Imagine a team of like Landau, Newble, Golding, Hops. Oh, gee, it's a lot of – there's a few holes there. You'd say if Jack White doesn't return, the choice is obvious. You get a 3-4 who can rebound and defend. But I think you just get best available. You know, I wouldn't be at all against, like, if a Casper Ware type became available and you shift McCarron off the ball handling duties. I mean, this is a team that's looked like their offense has just looked stagnant, and he's the point guard, and, you know, that's the responsibility. So maybe you look at getting a real, you know, gun set up point guard who can score and kill guys off the dribble and find people. Maybe that's
somebody like Melo Trimble, something like that.
Okay. You happy to move on from United? That was
okay.
That was a barb. That was no. Unless you got something else to add? No?
No.
Okay. Let's go. Where do you want to go?
Can we please talk about the LA 36ers?
Okay. Yeah, I knew this was coming. Because you just had a great tweet to me. I'll quickly say about Sunday Dech, and then you go into the text you sent me during the game. Sunday Dech came out at about the 7.5 minute mark. Adelaide were down 7. They actually looked like they were in the game. They were still active and aggressive. And then at the moment he left, it was a tidal wave of tech fouls, giving up offensive rebounds. They just totally went to water. You could feel the switch when he went off. He is that team. He just gives them consistent effort. He pulls guys along without barking at them. He just kind of leads by example. I'm going to be really monitoring his on-offs from now on, because I feel like that's the guy who glues that team together. The moment he left, it turned into a creche. It was just young petulance and terribleness. Terrible word for it. But what was the text you sent me? Or you go.
I think the one you're thinking of is where I said they've adopted the personality of their coach, tantrums and anger.
Perfect. That's exactly it. You had 2 tech fouls in the last 5 minutes when you were in the game.
Yep.
Sorry, you go, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, what was Crocodile and just pitching the ball into the stands? Yeah,
he clearly fouled. I thought he pushed off with the arm. I thought that was a 75-25 call that you're going to get called for.
You're just not going to win that. Like, why give an opportunity for the crowd to get revved up? You know, the whole, you just changed the context of the game, and they were still in it. They still had a chance.
Down 7 against the Wildcats at home.
To lose.
Oh, it was embarrassing. I was so embarrassed for them. I was like, this is so petulant and pathetic. It's just pathetic. They just collapsed. Yeah.
And then the greatest, like, irony of it, you had Connor Henry, who, his coaching, what is going on with his substitution patterns? Like, he's got Pinder playing huge minutes. Jack McVay played really well and probably needed more time. But the big aberration is they've got
Brandon Paul.
How much did they pay to get him into the team, right? Did they pay to get him courtside seats to watch a game of NBL? Like, put the guy on the court.
I'm going to ask this question. What basketball jargon are you beginning to hate more? Load management or minutes restriction? Which one are you hating more?
I'm hating minutes restriction.
Oh,
because total
minutes
bollocks.
Restriction, total bollocks. You're either going to get hurt or you're not. Like, basketball is an impact term injury. You either cop an elbow to the face or you break your finger on a block. Like these are things you can't predict. It's not like, oh, running 25 meters at full sprint is going to break him down. We've played this game. We know what it's like. It's not like that at all.
The greatest irony is, for all his minutes restriction or whatever, he bloody hurt himself running backwards and falling over his own feet.
I don't hate the love, but yeah, I saw that. And I was like, oh, like, if nothing proves that minutes restrictions, it's just so NBA. It's so, I read this in a textbook, and you know how when sometimes you make a mistake at work, and you're like, all right, I'm just gonna deny. Nope. Here's why I did it. Oh, it's not very good thinking. Yeah, well, I read this book, and this is why I went with it. And it's just the outcome is wrong, and you're just trying to justify yourself. I can't stand for it. But I mean, we didn't like this team coming in, but at the start of the year, I was like, oh, geez, we could be wrong about this, because there is a competitive combination on this team. I think you would agree with me. Humphreys aside, you've still got on this team Daniel Johnson, NBL second team. Brandon Paul, McVay, Crockett, Dech, Tease, and Giddy. I feel like that unit is enough to have you sniffing around sixth place. Right now, they look like they're rocketing to the bottom, and we'll talk about whether they are going to go to the bottom or not. One thing I want to say as well, like, Isaac Humphreys, we said this at the start of the year, we're like, can you depend on this guy to be your star? Now, I know he got hurt, but at the same time, it's like, if injuries are not the player's fault, who, you know, you either take the floor or you don't. I'm sure he's hurt. I'm not trivializing it, but it's like that becomes part of your manifesto. You know, if you're a person at work and you call in sick all the time, and whether it's justified or not, people are still like, it's Monday morning, we're still down a guy. You know, we thought we could depend on it. Yeah, it becomes part of your persona. And this from him, I mean, he's missed so many games. He missed games early on. He missed games now. He's on, how many games has he missed now? 8?
Yeah, something like that.
And it's just like, oh,
just saps the enthusiasm, brutal, doesn't it?
And, you know, with injuries, like, this is basketball. This is, apart from tennis, this is one of the softer sports in the world. Like rugby, Aussie rules. Like you get hurt in those, I can see why. You know, you're getting tackled, you're beat up. This is basketball. Come on.
Yeah. When I talk about load management, just point to, again, we talked about him earlier, Bryce Cotton. His load management over the last two games, he played 38 minutes, 21 seconds against Adelaide, and he played 35 minutes, 21 seconds against Cairns. Like, he's your best player. You put him on the court, right? Hey, Connor Henry, you've got a guy there, Brandon Paul, fresh off the airplane. Maybe he wants to show something.
Mm.
Put him on the court. That's where he could do the most damage.
Bold prediction. I think they're going to finish bottom. And I know Cairns are in the league. I haven't forgotten about them. I just want to... So Adelaide have played 19 games. They're 7-12. They had a lot of home games to start the season. The rest are on the road. Giddy's hurt. Humphreys is hurt. New Zealand are 4-10. I think you would agree that, I mean, obviously they've got, what, 5 games in hand. I feel like they're going to jump ahead of Adelaide. I don't know why I say that. Maybe I'm way off. And then Cairns are 14-14. My question to you, Andrew, is, are Adelaide going to finish dead last?
I think I picked them dead last at the beginning of the season.
We did, yep.
But I'm actually going to say no, because I'm going to say that Paul will finally get some court time and he'll win a few games for them just off the back of his own
will time. They finish? So you think they'll finish above Cairns? You think Cairns are going to finish bottom? 4-14.
Yep, I do. I do. Cairns at the bottom. I think it's pretty much as it stands now. Cairns, New Zealand, then Adelaide.
I think New Zealand are going to jump over this. I've liked their energy of late. I feel a positivity from them, whereas Adelaide, I feel this horrible negativity. I'm flipping those two. I think there's every chance Adelaide could just totally rock it down to the bottom. They've got that many away games, but Cairns are so poor. We'll talk about them in a second.
It wouldn't surprise me. Like, I'm not, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, I'm not pumping up Adelaide's tyres. I'm saying Brandon Paul looks to be a good player.
Question for you, Andrew. Who's more dysfunctional, Cairns or the 36ers?
Dysfunctional? Cairns. Cairns. They,
let's talk about Cairns. Let's talk about them.
Similar thing. I said the Adelaide 36ers were adopting the personality of their coach. Cairns, I don't think they're adopting the personality of their coach at all, which is part of their problem. They're sooking, whinging, moaning. They're not playing defense.
Nope.
They're looking around for excuses. Like, Nate Jawai came out of the game the other night and was like, chucked a sad.
Like, yeah, I couldn't know what to make of that.
Just can't do it. Keep it inside yourself. Even if you're angry, just bottle it up and say, right, I'm going to, next time I get on the court, I'm going to show you, mate.
Yeah, right. And I think with him, like, he's sort of a player who kind of rides he's not your star player. Like, he kind of rides the way the team's going. When they were winning 5 games, what, 3 years ago? Yeah, he was a part of that team. And then when they were winning, he was really good. Now they're down again and he's kind of, you know, he's just a go with the flow player, which is quite a good thing. But I didn't hate it from him. He wanted to be in the game. I don't know if it was more, was it frustration at him or frustration at the coach? They've got a weird relationship, him and Kelly. This is not the first time Jawai and Kelly have had it out in huddles and in games. I remember NBL 19, those two going crazy at each other. Do you have any explanation for it? Like, we like this team. They've had injuries to Majuk Deng, but they weren't playing well when he was in the lineup. I don't think that's an answer. Do you have any explanation?
I really don't know. It's like, do they just not like each other anymore or something?
Oh, I think the more team, it's like the chef in Fawlty Towers puts it best. The filthier the kitchen, the better the food. I think the more teams hate each other, sometimes that can be better. I think a lot of teams go well when they hate their coach and it brings the players together.
Yeah.
Here's my explanation for it. And I think Liam San Maria put it best on NBL Overtime, if you saw it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Like, his basic synopsis was Cam Oliver and 4 shooters, and it worked last year and guys were hitting shots. It hasn't happened this year because there's always been the one out of the lineup. Like, Krizlovic, decent shooter, but not great. Not Majuk Deng. You know, when this team was best, their lineup was Machado, Jerich shooting 40% like he was last year, DJ Newball, and then Majuk Deng and Oliver. No, Noy was on the bench.
Forget. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
He played terrible. But that was the 5. And they haven't been able to replicate that because there's always been one guy who can't really shoot it as well as that complementary four. I thought that was a really good explanation from Liam, and typically from him, he's really clever. So my question then is, like, how do you replicate that this season? And I've got a fix right now. First of all, maybe they should have looked at going after Tom Vodanovic, formerly Breakers, now Kings.
Yeah.
Bigger guy, can shoot it. He was available. He was there. If you were looking at your team and thought you wanted to replicate that style, maybe he could have come in as an injury replacement for Majuk Deng. He came in as an injury replacement to the Kings for what, Jarrell Martin? Anyway, he came in for someone. Yeah. The guy who's available,
no,
I think
it was for what's his name?
Glover. Or Cooks.
Oh, was it Glover?
Glover, what, take
one
your
of
pick.
Those guys.
Glover, Cook, Kickett, one of the many injured that
hey,
are
we didn't get paid for this.
He came into that team, that's the main thing. But he was available. He was there for Cairns. They could have got him. The other guy who I think right now, if you're serious about it, I'd go out and sign Ethan Rusbatch. And then your lineup becomes Machado, Jerick, Rusbatch, Natai, who's shooting the piss out of it, pardon the language, Cam Oliver. All of a sudden, you're getting a little bit closer. Maybe you give up a bit on D, but I quite like that team. I've really liked Jordan Natai.
Yep.
Jerich, Ethan Rusbatch, how he's not in the NBL, I don't know. I thought, you know, guys who can shoot it are always valuable. And that lineup looks a lot better than what they have, which is, you know, Krizovic kind of playing a bit too much, Noy not doing anything. And then you got, you know, Jared Kenny slots into that team. He's actually shooting well from the outside.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's if you're looking at real practical solutions, that's the only one I can offer up other than bumper sticker advice of work harder, try, you know, that sort of shit. Here's my explanation for why they're poor, and hear me out on this. I always think teams start and finish with their best players, right? And I feel like Machado's been at the level. So you look at Cam Oliver, and here's what I think. He had that great year last year, and then he went off to, I want to say, Israel, played even better over there. And I think he was thinking, all right, cool. I've done a year. I'm going back to the NBA. This is my ticket. Everyone would have told him, hey, go to the NBL, put up great stats, play a great year. Then we'll do Israel. You're back in the NBA within 365 days. He's gone great. He's busted his ass that year. Didn't happen. He's then gone, oh, the NBA didn't come calling. And he's gone, okay, well, what am I going to do now? And the Cairns have said, hey, here's a two-year deal. We're going to give you security. You're one of us. You're in. And we've seen a guy have to drop his dream, I think. And he's taken security. Everyone said to him, hey, just take the money, you know. You got to recalibrate your goals. And he's having a hard time doing it. And he signed that deal and probably thought, yeah, I'm contented with this. And then he's walked into Cairns. He's walked into a Bunnings warehouse that's converted. And it wouldn't be an inflating feeling, I'm sure. And he's like, this is – and now he's trying to recalibrate his thought to, instead of like, I'm trying to make the league, now I'm trying to be the best NBL player. It's a huge shift, and he struggled with it. Yep. That's what I think.
He needs – yeah, that's a great insight. I really like that. He hasn't taken that Bryce Cotton leap yet of mentality where it's like, I'm just going to – this is going to be my league. I'm going to dominate it, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to enjoy my life. He's not there yet. And Bryce Cotton got to taste the NBA.
Yeah, good point.
You know, Cam
And a bit of Europe and everything, people say DJ Newball missing this team. Obviously he is, but don't forget he was a part of this team that won five games. So he's not like a Bryce Cotton, plug him in, we're making the playoffs. He's not that player. Good player, but not that player. I want to ask you a question, Andrew Kenyon, and then we'll jump off from Cairns. Who would you rather have, Quat Noi, Dengadel?
Dengadel. Dengadel, I think.
Quat Noi's been really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad.
He's been terrible. It's him and, just a, I don't know. They're both disappointing, but.
Yeah, I see more so upside with Dengadel. I know. Yeah, but I think Quat Noi, there's just been such, he's had such an opportunity. There was such a vacuum for him to step into, and he just hasn't. And maybe he does, but I'm not hopeful. Do you want to quickly talk about the Sydney Kings? And Didi? You go.
Didi. We talked about load management and that guy, he's like a piece of crystal, like a trophy of crystal. You want to put him on the shelf, you want to look at him and you go, that's a specimen of a good basketball player. That's a lovely trophy. But don't actually use it. Because you'll break it.
I know.
Every time.
Is he the most brittle player in the NBL?
Well, it would appear so.
Yeah.
He never plays. At this rate, he should have been playing soccer, right?
Yeah, I think he's, even then. God, he just gets hurt. But the Kings, what I want to say about them is, oh, sorry, Andrew, you were saying?
No, I don't know. I'm just flabbergasted the amount of time this he is so far away from the NBA, Didi. Oh. By the way, like the fact that he's being talked about, or he has been drafted, right? He's draft and stash.
Oh yeah,
but he's going to be stashed for a long time. I don't think they're going to be bringing him.
He's young. I'll give him a break. Like he's 21, but if your body's not holding up at 21, is it going to be any better at 28, 31? I don't see that.
He's shown no development.
No, he's a decent defender in that, but that's not. Look at Jessup. Look at Vasiljevic.
Yep.
Vasiljevic had fouls in that last game, but he was like a plus 15 on the floor. Like, he is such a dynamic player. We're huge fans of his.
Yep.
The Kings, I kind of want to tip my cap to Adam Ford. I think with the injuries they've had, and I did call this team is the most boring team in the NBL. They had that one aberration where they smacked Melbourne United, but on the whole, they are an absolute in the mud. Other than that Melbourne United win, I don't think there's been a single attractive game they've played. No. I just think their games are brutal.
But I find them more likable this season than last season.
I totally concur. Totally agree. I don't know why. Why do you like them more?
I'm more into them this season. Like last season, they just seemed like a bunch of petulant, entitled people. Yeah, and I think
agreed.
Come from the top, right? He had a coach who'd had an amazing ride through the coaching career.
Mm-hmm.
You had Bogut, who's never short of an opinion.
Polarizing, sure.
Polarizing. And I just think, and then you had an owner who wouldn't shut up. Mm-hmm. They were just an unlikable team. Whereas I feel like this year they've got it better. Like the coach is good. The coach seems to be changing the approach for the players.
Humbled, I think. Yeah. I like Adam Ford. He's a little bit more natural, I guess is a word.
Yep. Jarrell Martin is a revelation.
Love that guy.
He seems like such a nice dude.
And like a big guy who scores, like big guys who just sit in the paint and block shots. Like, okay, cool, we've seen that before, but he's this sort of tricky up and under type of player. I really like Jarrell Martin as a player. Yep. I love watching him play. Yep. But yeah, they play a very grind you down style, which is not.
And Craig, not a good TV Craig Moller.
Oh.
He's hitting threes now.
I saw that. I think when we're up that big, everybody's hitting him. And no, but he's gone back to the bench, I think, and it's better for him. That's his role, I think. I don't think he started in the games. He's played well. Just know what you're comfortable with. But I just want to say that about the Sydney Kings. And are they going to finish in the four?
That's a stretch. That's a real stretch.
Depends on when they get Cooks back.
I think I've still got Phoenix ahead of them.
Even with Creek out?
That's probably the debate. Probably because I think they'll get enough out of Brokoff to offset it, and then they get Sykes back and Pinot's coming back. So I think they'll have enough.
Speaking of the Kings, I want to switch to something else now. Brighton's lawyers and the decals. Now, this kind of flew under the radar a bit, and I put it up there, and someone did actually say, "Oh, they tweeted that they were happy with the decal solution." In other words, Brighton's lawyers a couple of weeks ago had said, "Oh, we're taking the decals off the floor." And again, to use this word again, but there was a tidal wave of celebration and adulation. Just, oh, stop, you shut up. Oh, we take play. And they put out this big, this poetic, like JFK type statement that was like, how can we idly stand by when the players are in trouble? Won't somebody think of the children? And I just thought it was a bit much. And everyone was congratulating them for taking their decals off the floor. And they never took their decals off the floor. The decals are on the floor. They did it when they made the statement when they were at the Cup in Melbourne. And then they've come back and they're still on the floor. They did, however, say that they were happy with the fact that the NBL has gone back to the old decals. But I have a point about this, but I want to get your impression first, Andrew.
Oh, it's classic marketing, right?
Totally.
You get upside on both sides of it. You know, you say you're going to do something, you get the kudos, and then you keep going with the advertising. Well played.
Well played. Here's what I have to say, though. So what this means to me is obviously Brighton's lawyers said, okay, we're happy with the solution. We're happy with the reverting to last year's decals, right?
Yeah.
So that means are the Sydney Kings, the players you so wish to protect and look after, and you know, being a injury compensation lawyers, you know, that's kind of your business of injury prevention. Would the players agree with you? If you spoke to Didi and Vasiljevic, who were very vocal on the city, he said, They've reverted back to last year's decals. Are you totally happy? Is the problem of slipping now over? I don't think they'd say yes. I think they'd say it's improved, but it's still a danger.
Yeah.
Now, not to be, lawyers do sort of the fine print is the work of lawyers, but in that they said, we can't put the decals back on the court. And I wish I had the exact quote, but people are smart enough. You can look it up on Google. It was like, if there's any chance of injury, we don't want to be a part of it. Well, if you ask Taylor Braun, those last year's decals still pose an injury risk. And I'm sure if you asked Andrew Bogut or the Kings and said, are you totally happy with this situation? They'd say, no, we want them off the floor entirely. So that's where I'm kind of wrestling with this. And then also that means that if everyone is happy, let's say Vucevic and Didi are like, yep, thumbs up, we love them. Does that mean that Larry Kesselman saved the day? You know what I mean? Does that mean he saved the day? Do we have to come out and say, the decals is fixed, it's over, Bryden's lawyers, all the players, we're on, thank you, Larry K, we had a problem and you fixed it. Ooh, this is where I get a little spicy.
Bryden's lawyers, if you just want to send the defamation action straight to Joe Kaur, Andrew Kane is not interested in talking about it.
The problem is I then hire them to defend me against them. So either way, I've got them because no win, no fee, right? just saying. And I tell what.
I have to say something on this issue. It's a little bit less substantial, but I had a mate message me and he said to me, can you stop bloody saying decals? And I said, yeah, I know, right? Why do I keep saying decals? Because all my life growing up doing model, putting model cars together and you put the stickers on, they were decals. And I would say decal. And I think it's the influence of listening to American podcasts. And I think
they call them decals. Deckle.
I think they call them decals in America, and it's rubbed off on me. And yeah, I'm not happy with it either. So a big apology for having to listen to me say decal, because I agree, it is decal. I've just got to get myself back in the habit.
Let's jump to Lamar Patterson, the Bullets. This is one of our last topics. Does signing Lamar Patterson help them win the chip?
Can't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. But does it like put them in top two contention?
Nah.
Nah, not even close.
I just don't. It's going to be weird to see how he's going to fit. Is he going to come off the bench? Is he going to? Is he going to upset the Law Sobey connection?
The question I want to ask
is what they're getting.
That's true. But here's my. I think the question of are they contender can be distilled down to a question more poignant. Does this move help the Bullets beat Bryce Cotton and the Wildcats? And my answer is no. What's yours?
Yeah, I don't
see how.
No,
it doesn't help really them stop Bryce Cotton. Doesn't help them against Mooney. I don't see it.
No. That might be our score against Luke Travers. But, yeah, maybe. it's not really moving the needle. But he's certainly better than Orlando Johnson. I've been calling for his head for a long time. So I've got to applaud that decision. Finally, that's somebody listening to me.
There you go. They're not worse. I think we both agree on that. Certainly not worse. I tell you that though, if Lamar Patterson comes back from injury before the prescribed time, I'm going to do my nut, because how peculiar was this timing, right?
You smelt a rat here for a while, haven't
listen, injury. I've only ever had to like actually really call in. Well, I have a theory with work. Like I get sick on company time. I get better on company time. I've never taken a sick day when I'm actually sick. They're always. Oh, shit. I get snips of it.
Hear that? But, people give this man a job.
But come on. But second opinion, sit out, and then he gets cut. You don't cut a wounded soldier. Come on. I smell something. And then I'm just saying. Happy to move on from them. I've got some tough questions for you, and one point I want to make. NBL overtime. I watched it. I just want to make a little point out there. Let's put Cam Luke in the center of the panel. Because at the minute, on screen, it goes left of screen, it's Liam Santa Maria, then Corey Homicide-Williams, then Cam Luke. I want to see Cam Luke go in the middle. Yeah. He's the host of the show, so when he talks to the show, it's right down the barrel of the camera. And then, you know, it's kind of like Liam Santa Maria and Corey Homicide-Williams who argue against each other. You want that for the sight lines. You want that across the table. You can't have, it's awkward when Corey and Liam are talking or debating. Because they're right next to each other and that's awkward. You want them across the table so they're kind of shouting at each other. I think that'd be a better way to set that up. If you see that switch happen, you know what's going on. Improve the sight lines. That's what I want to say. Let's last little topic and then we're out of here. I got a couple of tough questions for you, Andrew, because people seem to like this on the last episode. Question one.
Tough questions.
Of the New South Wales teams.
This is the body. Am I up against body for you?
Somewhat.
The tough questions?
Somewhat. Yeah, right. I think so. Of the New South Wales teams, who finishes higher on the ladder?
Oh, my word. I will say the Hawks.
Okay, I differ on you. Why do you say the Hawks?
I just think they've got enough talent to do a little bit better. I think what we've seen is we've seen the best and the worst of the Hawks over the last few weeks. I think over time the best will win out, and I think they've just got a little bit greater level of talent than the Kings.
You really think so? I think.
Well, actually, maybe that's not right.
Well, I'll ask you this.
But I'm still going to say the Hawks.
I just say this. I think Casper Ware and Jarrell Martin may be on form, second best import duo in the league. Cairns really? And Machado and Oliver are obviously better on their day, but it's for the reason they're not working. Cotton and Mooney first, obviously. Who would be better?
I'm just still not liking Casper Ware at the moment.
Oh, really? I'm not. I am. I think he's a walking, what is 14 wins in a normal length NBL season. And he gets guys going. Like, that team is not, that talent around him is not great. And he wills them to wins. Now, I'm a fan.
Okay.
What don't you like?
His outside shooting game is still so weak. And he's still overly reliant on it. If he goes back to Casper, get in the key, Casper, take mid-range jump shots, Casper, I'm okay with it. But he still seems happy to settle for that three ball a little bit too often.
Fair criticism. I just think he's a point. Like that play where he knocked the ball away from Machado, he totally won that game with that play.
That
knocked it
true.
Away. Cairns didn't know what to do. It's little things like that. I'm not one of those sort of, oh, the little things. Aren't I so clever? I noticed. But I just saw that and I thought, this guy just knows how to do shit at the right time. Pardon the language. Second question for you, Andrew Canyon. Worst coach in the NBL to this point. It's not as obvious as you think. Have a good think about this.
Okay, I'm just looking down the coaching list. Worst coach.
There's three big candidates, obviously. Yeah, Mike Kelly, Shamir, and Connor.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with my Connor Henry frustration.
I have the same answer. Why?
Well, he puts off an air of being so frantic. And agitated. I don't think a player is going to respond well when the coach is constantly freaking out, losing his voice after the first quarter. He doesn't fill me with faith that he's got the plan worked out.
I agree with the same reason. And well, I'll ask you before I give the answer, why not Mike Kelly? They have the worst record. You would have thought that would be the obvious answer. Why not Mike Kelly?
I think this is a bit of a case of where when the team wins, people play as the players. When the team loses, they blame the coach. Mm-hmm. He's the same coach as they had last season, and he was great. I think it comes down to the players. Like, if Cam Oliver was getting 20 and 10, they wouldn't be 4 and 14.
Right,
like, he can't go out and get rebounds for Cam Oliver. So. Mm.
I agree with you this, and here's why I don't say Mike Kelly. I look at his rotations, and I think they're as good as ever. And he's made slight changes, and there's been injuries also at 36ers. But Mike, like, he's still giving those imports the right amount of time. Like, people are like, "Oh, play Mojave King." He hasn't given into that pressure, which was, you know, absurd if they want to win.
Can I just say quickly? Sorry, jump in on that.
Yeah, no, do indeed.
People keep saying play Mojave King. Whenever he does, Mojave King just misses shots and misses defensive assignments and doesn't do much. I don't get it. This is a narrative, I think, that people are pushing for the Next Stars program rather than...
Well, it's a younger crowd who want to see him play. I've never understood that, where it's like, oh, we want to see one guy play. I was like, I'd rather see a sort of good team play or a good game, regardless of who's in it. But, you know, it's just a real push from the younger crowd to sort of see all the Next Stars and a bit of NBA polish, and they get really, really blows up people's skirts. I think with, Mike Kelly, like, those imports of play, the rotations look pretty good. Like, you look at Connor Henry, like, what is this? Madron, you're starting over Paul. Pinned. Like, you can just, there are things that just, even to the most casual of casual fans, that glare and go, Why is a good player not in his best position? It's maddening, Connor. What are you thinking, man? What are you doing?
Yep.
But both, I think, and you look at the Mojave King issue and you look at the Pinder problem, bit of a form, what was Lighthouse Sports? Bit of a Lighthouse Sports issue. I'm going to throw out a theory, and I love conspiracy theories, but I think there's no explanation for Pinder getting minutes over McVeigh or even really minutes at all. I think there's an issue where they've gone, hey, if you play Pinder a certain amount, we'll cut you in on a better percentage of when Giddy's buyout from the NBA. Just a theory.
Crazy.
Crazy theory, but I cannot think. If you are just a independent, fold your arms, watch the games, how many minutes should Pinder get? And you arrive at an answer of what he's getting, which is what, 25 or so sometimes?
Yeah.
You're not being honest to yourself in the game.
Look, I get what you're saying. I'm not sure about the reasoning. I think we need a few people, a few more Patreon subscribers so we can buy some more tinfoils so Joe can make some hats.
Listen, it's all crazy until it happens. I just can't fathom why that's happening. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. Most overrated player to this point in the NBL. Andrew.
You're asking me.
Tough one. And we don't like to, we want to be pumpers, not dumpers, but yeah, you know, yeah. Look, you got to do this shit.
I think I'm probably going to say Deng Adel.
Okay.
From the Hawks. Cause,
defensive player of the year to start the thing. Da, 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 and then
came out NBA. He's going to dominate. He's going to blow up the league.
Boomers. Yep. NBA.
And laid a giant egg. I don't think he's really had, maybe he had one good game. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
But I'm scratching to really remember it. So I think I've got to go with him. I think he's on big money. I think.
Oh, he'd be on decent money. Yeah, I think. Well, you look at their second import, Justin Simon. Looks like they've shifted money from that import.
Spare parts. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Who we like, but, you know, is a complimentary player. My answer is going to be Ty Webster. I think, you know, Galatasaray, you know, while he didn't have that Deng Adel NBA heat, like EuroLeague, big hit. I thought he was going to really propel his team. He just hasn't been that player. He's put up good stats and everything, but I'm kind of like, I was expecting, like, when I hear EuroLeague, I was expecting a little bit more from him. And it hasn't, the effort's been there, but just sort of the decision-making things. Young player, but yeah, I remember when they signed him, it was like, whoa, same thing with Adele. Like, whoa, big player. Wow, we're going to get this, preparing the brothers. And it just, that fun outside of the social media stuff, which he's been great at, it hasn't quite translated onto the on-product floor that I want, a product I want to watch on the floor. So that's why I said Ty Webster.
Yeah. Well, he sort of seems like he's more of a personal stats chaser than a team stats chaser.
Mm. I mean, his usage rate is off the woo! It's like Haley's Comet. Most underrated player to this point in the NBL.
Most underrated? This is hard.
Tough. Yeah,
really hard.
Can I give my answer first, giving you time to think, or do you want to?
I've got one, but I don't know if he's sufficiently underrated, but I'll tell you anyway. Ben Moore.
Okay. He got a bit of heat this week. Yeah,
he did. Yeah, he sort of showed up. But I feel like he's been doing a lot of work that maybe goes unnoticed and helping that team in its entirety rather than getting numbers for himself. And I think what he did show this week was he can actually perform at an individual level as well. So
yeah,
I'll say Ben Moore, but I'm happy to consider alternatives.
Yeah. The thing I like with Ben Moore is he did something in a short period of time that a lot of import bigs struggle with, which is he seems to have adapted to the officiating, which is really tough. And he's done it in about 5-6 games. And it was really brutal there for a while. He kind of seems to have worked it out. And that's no easy skill to acquire, you know, when you've played your whole life a certain way and then all of a sudden you have to cater to NBL officiating. Really tough. My answer is Casper Ware. That team is hovering around the finals. They got a lot of injuries. We didn't like them and they're quite good. And, you know, I think he's NBL second team.
Wow.
Yeah, I look at his game and I just think without him, that Sydney Kings team is bad. They are bad. If Melbourne United had him in the place of McCarron, they'd be a lot better team.
Yeah.
Better team.
Yep.
If a lot of teams had him, they'd be so much better for it. So that's why, you know, imagine if he was at New Zealand. He would work wonders with like Finn Delaney and Abercrombie and stuff like that. So that's why I say Casper Ware. Will Mitch Creek return this season? You sort of dabble around legality. You know, you've lived the life. What he's up against. And...
I'm not sure. I've lived quite the same life.
Oh no! Snip, snip, snip. What I mean is, you read the papers. You're a learned man of the world. You know how long court cases can take and things like that. Not that you've ever done anything wrong, but you've just lived a life. Does that make sense? I'm leaving this in. Is Mitch Creek going to return this season? And clarify my question and dig yourself in any holes I've dug you.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say no, he isn't, and leave it at that.
Yep. Okay. I agree with you, and I will also leave it at that. Next import out the door. We've had most recently Johnson, and I guess kind of Lamar Patterson at the same time.
Yep.
Who's next, if any?
Who's next? This is a tough one. I am dead air as I think about this.
Have a think. Let me, while you're thinking, I think with this question, you have to look at two things. Firstly, a performance, but also think about like lingering injuries. Mm. Some teams are going to be like, listen, you're hurt. We can't wait. We got to make a move.
I sense you couldn't possibly be going to Kiefer Sykes, could you?
I have him written down, but I wouldn't, but I'm just trying to, I'm just looking in the crystal ball. I'm just trying to think, oh, what could happen? And I think, gee, if that injury lingers any longer, I mean, 3 to 6 weeks, a long time. Yeah. These next two rounds are like crammed packed full of games in 6 weeks,
I've seen how good he can be.
He
can be so good.
But if he's never getting better, if 6 weeks goes on to like, oh, he's not ready, it's going to be another three more. We saw this with Casey Prather. Casey Prather.
True, yep.
But if he's not taking the floor, he's not taking the floor.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to keep him, and I'm going to go out and say the import cull is finished. We are done.
You're done?
No more coming through.
Can I throw out a name that I think's...
Oh, hang on. I've got one more. I've got one. If I had to pick one, Colton Iverson.
Oh, I think he's done. Tony Crocker doesn't? No, Crocker and Connor seem very close. Now. I like Crocker too. And he sits their budget and their style. Yeah. Colton Iverson, okay. Maybe.
But I don't think it's actually going to happen. But,
They've already got rid of one. You can't get rid of two. Has that happened in a while? I can't remember. I want to throw out a name. Lamar Patterson. Does this happen again?
He's
still not in shape, still not playing well, and Brisbane just go, you know what? We tried. This didn't work. We couldn't recapture lightning in a bottle for the second time. Just a thought.
Yeah. Just a thought. Can you put a no-cut clause in your contract?
No, absolutely not. But yeah, countering that, Brisbane, Lamanis, incredibly patient people. Like Lamanis, he's like a guy sitting on a park bench in the rain. He'll just wait it out. You know, I think he'll take it. That's it. We've come in under an hour, longer than we wanted, but it was a fun episode. Anything else, Andrew?
Buy a copy of the book so we can stop shilling it.
No, please. I've got 5 copies left. I just actually have bagged one up and sent it off to someone in Western Australia. So thank you to that person. I won't name them because that probably breaks privacy laws.
It's a good book. But
thank you for buying one. It's a really good book.
It's not a scam. He will send it to you.
Send it to you. If it doesn't get to you, it's Australia Post's problem. I've had that. I fixed that issue. I don't know what happened there. But if you buy one, you will get one. That's my promise. I got 5 left now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, count them in one hand. I want these things out of my house. I got one as a doorstop, paperweight as one. Yeah.
I've got one more question for you. What are you looking forward to seeing in this next round of games?
Let me quickly bring them up because that's a very good question.
Just give me one thing to watch out for.
I mean, every sports fan in Australia should be looking at what Cotton's doing, and I don't know who the Wildcats are playing. The throwdown is interesting. Sydney Perth. Wow. If I had to go with one of them, I'm going to say I'll go Sydney Perth.
You're going to say watch that game?
Watch that game. That's on Sunday at 3:00. What about you?
I'm going to say tune in to the Cairns Adelaide game and give us some feedback, who's the worst coach?
It's one of those two.
You watch it.
One of those two.
You, One coach will be in control and one won't be, but which one is which?
That's on Sunday at 5 o'clock. We'll try and get back on Twitch. We haven't done it for rounds and rounds. We've been inundated, but we'll do one of these. We'll try and get Body in to do maybe an Adelaide game. There's plenty on the road for them later in the week. But that's it. There's a lot of basketball coming up these next couple of rounds. Like, I think it's like 16 games in 10 days, or just an incredible schedule. Enjoy the games. If you like this podcast, do all the nice things, and we will see you next time. Ciao.
Bye.